Thank you very much and good evening, everybody. This is Praveen here. I want to take you through the highlights of the last quarter, starting with deposits. Our deposit growth has been slightly about 20% YOY, and the CASA growth was about 18% year-on-year. Our focus on CASA is savings account, and savings growth has been 21% year-on-year. During the last quarter, we crossed the 50,000 crore total deposit mark. In a market which had tightening liquidity, we improved our CD ratio to 81.6%, and our LCR is well over the 120% threshold that we kept for ourselves internally. On the loans front, we have had a loan growth of 18.9%. Our restructured book now is 2.34% net, considerably less than what we started off with. Our credit cost is very comfortable, though there is a slight elevation in the NPA ratios, and our provision coverage ratio is 76%. These are top line numbers. On the profitability front, our NIM has come down to 3.39% in this quarter, and our fee has hit a high of 143 crore. The core fee income is robust at 114 crores. The cost to average assets in Q125 is 2.71%, slightly less than the 2.73 of the same quarter last year. On the non-financial front, we had two very important technology upgrades during the quarter. One was that we upgraded our treasury system. We have a new TCS system which is there for our treasury. And also, from a cybersecurity perspective, we have an upgraded SIEM system. In the last quarter, we have made some basic rejig, which I think is important for the bank from a future growth perspective. This is mainly on the assets front. Mortgage is undergoing a bit of a revamp. It's a bit of a rejig. We are reorienting ourselves to business loans. Mostly, if you look at our mortgage book, it is cut half in home loan and business loans. Increasingly, we would be pursuing business loans within the framework that we currently have. The second element in the mortgage revamp is that we are reclaiming the 50 lakh to 1 crore space very, very well within the MSME self-employed segment. Over a period of time, from 2016 to now, there has been a steady decline in our ticket size. There was a skew favoring affordable housing and small ticket LAP. There's nothing wrong with that. The only thing is that from a productivity perspective, there is a market out there, specifically the 50 lakh to 1 crore range, which is a space that you were comfortable with, we are comfortable with. So there is a greater thrust on getting that going, in addition to the affordable housing and the small ticket business loan that the bank anyway does. The second area of modification is our focus on engagement. Our SME book will be more focused on the overdraft product that we have. Currently, the SME that you see, if you were to look at the investor presentation, it comes has a combination of TREDs and the traditional SME products that we have. Over the next, in the future, you would see the reliance on TREDs coming down and overdraft coming into play. It will help the yield. It will also help cross-sell. It will also help increase the fees. The second part of the engagement is on the CASA front. There is while we have grown savings account by 21% YOY and CASA also by 18%, there is increased thrust on improving the CASA even further as we go along. And this would come from focusing on engagement at multiple levels, both digital as well as relationship manager-based engagement. The third element is greater use of data analytics to deepen and widen relationships within the bank. So we have a dedicated team solely focused on increasing product penetration within the bank. This, ladies and gentlemen, is a summary of the last 90 days. If you have any questions, feel free to answer. I have my leadership team also here with me. Feel free to ask the questions, and we'll provide you with the answers.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. First question is from the line of Rohan Mandora from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. So I wanted to understand on NIMS and the compression that has happened this quarter, especially on the yields, 20 basis point decline. So is there any one-off here, or how should we look at the yield trajectory going ahead?
Yeah. Hi, Rohan. Rohan, the NIM compression primarily comes from two components. We are at the last leg of the term deposit renewals. The term deposit that we booked, the long-term term deposit that we booked in the past, have come up for renewal, and now they are repricing themselves to the current rate, which is obviously higher than what got booked 2 to 2.5 years back. So we are at the last leg of it. Probably that will stabilize. It will flatten out by middle of third quarter. What you also can see is that if you see the trend line of the cost of deposits, the rate of increase is coming down. From a 6.77, it has increased by 18 bips from quarter 2 to quarter 3, and then subsequently became 13 bips from quarter 3 to quarter 4, and from quarter 4 to the first quarter of this year, you're seeing a 2 bips increase. So we'll see a stabilization of that coming through. So that's one element to it. The other element, Rohan, is that there has been some regulatory changes on the loans front, which has resulted in interest reversal, which we believe is a one-time thing. This also includes the change from penal interest to penal charges, which the circular which Reserve Bank has come up with. So we implemented that, and we have also ensured that incremental disbursements of loans, the interest charge is from the DD handover date. So on an ongoing basis, we can see the NIM rising up because we don't expect too much of one-offs to continue in the future.
Sure. So here, sir, if you can quantify what was the total impact due to the regulatory changes on the yields?
That's something which I don't think we can tell you right now. The only thing is that there are two components we can speak about. One is about the penal interest component being replaced with penal charges, and you see a slightly elevated fee income also coming through correlated to that. And the second part is for ensuring that the loan dispersal interests are accrued from the handover date and not necessarily from the dispersal date.
Sure. And so with this changes, like the NIM guidance that we typically give, 365 to 370 basis point, does that change for a steady state?
Not really. In an ongoing basis, we should. As you know, NIM has got multiple components: yield, cost of funds, the slippages, aging of provisions, right? Plus any one-offs that may happen. we expect the one-offs, you know, the June booking may have some bit of spillover into July, but beyond that, I don't think that will happen.
Sure. But sir, for the current financial year, would it be fair to assume that the NIMS would undershoot the guidance because of this impact?
Unlikely. Not because of any particular reason. We don't expect that.
Then, sir, what will the drivers for NIM expansion from the current levels? Because the cost of funds would go up. On the advances side, like we had explained that certain part of the mortgages book is on that fixed or floating thing. So that may have some impact. And
three elements, Rohan.
Right.
One, I repeat, the rejigging of the mortgage book, which would result in higher quantum of business loan over home loan. So the kind of onboarding rates on business loans are significantly higher than that of housing loan. The second thing is that we are focusing on overdraft, SME overdraft at the expense of SME TReDS. And TReDS obviously is a smaller tenor loan at a lower yield. So we will compensate that with a SME overdraft facility. So you will see that there is a difference in the yield that one gets. And the third element, what you said, is not a new element. As in when the hybrid loans come up from fixed to floating, the bank gets the benefit of the increased EBLR, which is not being passed down because of the benchmark changing post the customer coming into the fixed rate criteria.
Sure, sir. So secondly, on the other OPEX piece, what kind of a trajectory should we expect for FY25?
Our cost to average assets is 2.71%. We would expect that to come down steadily to 2.5%.
Okay, and over what time frame?
In the very near future.
Okay. Sure. And so just if you can quantify the amount of construction finance book?
About 5%. About 4%.
Sure, sir. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Viraj from Simple. Please go ahead.
Yeah, am I audible? Hello?
Viraj, yes, you are.
Yeah, just a couple of questions. First is, you know, as for our presentation, we have a stated guidance to achieve 1% ROA and 13-14% ROE. Now, this would imply a leverage of 13-14 times. So, you know, if I look at the last 14-15-year history of our bank, we have never operated at such a high leverage. And also, you know, we would have also, to achieve this kind of ROE, we have one of the highest leverage among private sector banks. So if you can just help us understand if we and the board are comfortable operating at such a high leverage, and what is our thought process to have such a high leverage?
Sorry, Viraj, can you repeat your question?
I'm audible.
Yeah, you're audible now.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that, you know, if you look at our presentation, we have a stated guidance to achieve 1% ROA and 13-14% ROE.
Correct.
Implied walking would be that this would have a leverage of 13-14 times. And if I look at a 14-15 year history of our bank, we will never operate at such a high leverage. So, in fact, we would, to achieve, operate at this kind of leverage, we would be among the highest in private sector banks. So if you can just help us understand if we and the board are comfortable operating at such a high leverage, and what is the thought process to have such a high leverage?
If you look at the net worth of 5,000 plus crores, okay. We work on an RWA of 53%. So what you're seeing is a very efficient use of capital. So, this has been consistently been done from 2018 onwards, you would see that our RWAs are primarily in the less than 55% category. So there is considerably lower usage of capital, and that has resulted in the ROE being close to 12.5 times the ROA.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Yes, you are audible. Management.
Yeah. So, I mean, so we will be talking about increasing it further to 12.5 to almost 14 times to achieve the kind of ROE we want to achieve, you know, over the next few years.
You would continue to see that the risk-weighted assets would be in the region of 54%. So the internal accrual of capital at a 17 to 18% growth will come from within. But as and when, because our ambition is not to grow 17%, but if we are looking at a 20% growth, then a fresh infusion of capital would certainly happen.
What would be the proportion of fixed rate and floating rate loan book for us? And if rate cuts were to happen at the end of the year, how do you see the impact of rate cuts on our NIM?
I can answer the second part. So we have three types of loans. So one is a fixed rate loan, other is a hybrid loan, and third is a floating rate loan. In case a rate drop happens, one of the things which we can do is to ensure that there is a simultaneous drop of a similar rate on a savings account book, where the proportions would be similar. We got 11,000 crore book on savings account, and if that particular portion of 42,000 crore of asset book were to have a benchmark related reduction, we would see a similar reduction in a similar time frame happening on the savings account book also. We see that because savings account is more or less retail in nature, it is reasonably price inelastic. Maybe at the top end, we could have a bit of a customer movement happening, but then the benchmark affects most players in the industry as well.
And, you know, in the budget, there has been an announcement of credit guarantee scheme for MSMEs. So if you can just help us understand what this scheme is and if in any way it is beneficial for our bank to underwrite a higher number of loans or underwrite better quality loans.
So there is this program called Tarun, which has been extended to 20%, to 20 lakhs. Our team is looking at the budget proposals and getting studying it, and then we'll come back with an action plan on whether that makes long term viable sense for us or otherwise.
Okay, just two questions. One is on the fee income growth. I think, you know, if you can just elaborate more, are we driving that, to increase? I think historically it used to be close to 1%, but it's been trending lower for last few quarters. So how are we looking at driving that better in coming quarters? And second is on the promoter preferential issuance. If you can give an update, by when do we expect that to happen?
So, on the first question, which is the fee income, we've had a 33% YOY growth on fee, Q1 24 versus Q1 25. There was some bit of inorganic fee also there, but from a core income perspective, 114 crore of fee income has been announced primarily by some good performance from the third-party distribution, processing fee, etc., which is a repeatable fee income revenue. So that's one part of it. The second part of it is that some amount of elevation is there because the what would have otherwise come in NIM has come in fee on account of the penal charges coming to play instead of penal interest. But on an ongoing basis, where will the fee come from? How would we go more towards 1%? The answer to that is that the whole engagement model, which I spoke about in the beginning, is to drive overdraft and CASA. And what is common between overdrafts and CASA on either side of the balance sheet is that these are high engagement products, and when engagement happens, there is an opportunity to cross-sell. And as a bank, we have multiple avenues to cross-sell, both physically as well as through the net. So effectively, the shift to CASA, and you've seen some parts of it already, with a savings account growth of 21%, some part of that is still bearing fruit. There's lots more one can see going forward. And movement from Threads, which is a fairly anonymous system-based lending to overdraft-based lending of SME would result in a higher opportunities to come by, both on the funding front as well as on the bank guarantees and other fee revenues which we can get from them.
Okay, on the promoter fund infusion.
The promoter capital, there are a few more documents that are been sought for. We are in the process of submitting it, and once that happens, we would get the clearance. And once the clearance comes in, the capital inflow should happen within a few days, if not weeks.
So maybe by Q2 we expect the closure.
We expect it by Q2 definitely. So usually it's an iterative process. Some documents are asked for, and then some more are asked. So assuming that particular process is complete, then the infusion should happen practically immediately.
Okay, I'll come back in queue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Mona Khetan from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir, good evening.
Hi, Mona, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good sir, thank you. The first question is on margins again. So, you mentioned of, the impact on NIM partly being offset by higher fee lines where penal interest got converted to penal charges. So, to that extent, shouldn't the NIM going forward settle at lower levels, or simply because there'll be levers on yields from changing loan mix, you believe that the guidance will be maintained?
One of the two things in this, actually three things in this. One, what you said of penal interest coming back as penal charges. Second is about, refund of interest for loan disbursements from the time of the demand draft being made to the time the demand draft is handed over. These are one-time events. A bit of a spill-off may happen into July as well, but beyond that, I don't see that one-off coming into play as far as the NIM is concerned. From a slightly longish perspective, the repricing of long tenor term deposits would continue to middle of third quarter, after which you would see a stabilization of the rate of cost of deposits. I would draw your attention to the key ratio sheet, page number 13, if you have it with you. And if you were to look at the cost of deposit, you see it is on an increasing curve, but the rate of increase is decreasing in every quarter. So from a 16%, 18%, 16 bips, 18 bips, 13 bips, it's now come to 2 bips, and you probably will see it stabilizing before tapering. So then what would really in reality happen is that the percentage increase in the interest income would reflect the percentage increase in the top line growth.
Okay. And secondly, when I look at your coming to the yield bit, so what would be the share of hybrid book? And if I recollect last quarter, there was a big gain from some of the fixed rate loans being converted to floating, etc. So do Do these gains continue this quarter and in the ensuing quarters as well, or the benefit has largely already played out?
The benefit is not gone fully. There is some more pending. It is like we spoke about term deposits, right? The old term deposits are coming up for renewal right now. Similarly, there are hybrid rate loans which are continuing as fixed, where in the future you would see them becoming floating, and there will be a upside as and when that the movement to floating happens. That story is not over yet.
Got it. But roughly how big would be that book on a steady state basis?
That's not a publicly revealed information. One of the ways you can look at it is that we told you that in case, you know, we have to immunize ourselves against a rate cut, we said that we will look at the savings account book as a buffer for making similar kind of changes. That kind of gives you an indication as to how much will be floating.
Sure, got it. Thanks. That's all from my side.
Right.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all the participants in the conference, please restrict your questions to two per participant. If you have any follow-up questions, you may rejoin the queue. Next question is from the line of Jay Mundra from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Good evening. All good, sir. Thank you. Sir, I wanted to check on the slippages. So even
sorry to interrupt, Mr. Jay. Your voice is breaking.
Is this better now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Sure. So wanted to check on slippages, sir. Excluding gold loan, the slippages at 2% plus still looks on a bit higher side. What is driving this, and how should one look at this number going ahead?
So if you were to look at page number 25, okay, please have a look at the bottom table on the right hand side of page number 25. So you can see that there is an increase in the mortgage book from 445 crores. There is the stock has increased to 486 crores. So within that, home loan is one area where there is a elevated slippage happening. But then we are, it's not something which keeps us awake in the night. It is, I don't see that. I see that more as episodic rather than as a continuous problem to handle.
Okay. And secondly, sir, you have partly indicated this, but if you can quantify the yield change in this quarter, or how much of the yield decline was due to penal charges flowing from NII to fee income, and maybe because of the higher slippages, just to understand the yield movement correctly.
Yeah, so it is not those two items alone, first of all, Jay. Okay, what those two items are there, but there is also a third item, which is that refund of interest from the day of disbursal to the day of handover of the demand draft. So there are three elements to it, which contribute to what, if you were to compare with Q4, it is 1171 was our yield, now it is 1150. We don't give the individual break of it. What I can say with confidence is that the penal interest to penal charges is a one-time that is done and dusted. The refund of interest on booking is something which is there for the June 30th booking also, which would practically be for what? Maybe 2 weeks or 3 weeks. But on an incremental basis, we don't have that problem. So the day on which the disbursal happens is the day on which the handover happens in that sense. So those two one-offs will not happen, and the rest of the yield is a question of the mix. And I told the group on a go-forward basis, three items where we are increasing the yield. One is movement from the thrust movement from a 50-50 home loan business loan to a higher business loan. Second is reduction in the TREDs outstanding, more than compensated by genuine SME overdrafts, which happened. So these two elements would result in higher yield, and we don't expect any other quote unquote one-offs to happen in on a go-forward sense.
Sure, sir. Thank you, and all the very best.
Thanks, Jay.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Prakhar Agarwal from Elara Capital. Please proceed.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Just wanted to get a sense on OPEX, so cost OPEX that you probably said that you prompt 2.7 to 2.5. What is the reason for this being elevated this time around, and what will lead to the changes that you probably said that in the near term you'll probably see from 2.7 going to 2.5?
So I personally think that it is the reduction in the on the NIM which has resulted in the elevation. It's not necessarily the cost perspective, from a cost to income perspective. On cost to average assets, we have increased the number of people, and how well we squeeze the productivity from the team would and how we build the book will also determine how the cost to average assets will decrease. The third element to that is that a lot of investments have been made in technology. The impact of it is yet to come, is happening in the future, which involves reduction in multiple costs, including courier charges, our stationary charges. In fact, we have a system called MyDocs, where more than 80 odd dispatches to customers have been replaced with electronic communication, where customers can get information at will by going into the website, not necessarily through logging into the app. So the three elements to this, the biggest element of course is productivity, because we have invested in the people, and we need to sweat the returns from the people that we invested. The second element is the focus on higher ticket size, which also will with the same cost you're getting a higher ticket size with similar kind of yield. And the third element, like I told you, is the operational cost reduction because of investments in technology.
Got it. Just one more qualitative comment on how has been the behavior of your co-lending book on FLDG size, and have you seen any deterioration in there?
First of all, FLDG and co-lending cannot coexist. You cannot have FLDG for co-lending. Okay, that's against the law. So there is no FLDG. So good that you asked the question. So on March 4th, one of our big partners, co-lending partners, has had a embargo on sourcing a particular product, and they were one of the biggest co-lending partners by a long chalk. We've had near perfect recovery from that in March, April, May, June, and July so far. In addition to that, this also meant that no fresh sourcing for the originator means no fresh co-lending for that originator's partner. But that has not impacted our book, because if you were to see the previous quarter end, our co-lending book was 7.5% of the total assets. Now it is 7.2% or 7.1%. So there's hardly any difference. So the bank has very nimbly worked out on other co-lending partners to make up for the shortfall of co-lending. Otherwise, we would be sitting on a massively low asset growth, both for the quarter and for the YOY basis. So, net short answer: quick compensatory action on on other co-lending partners, impact on portfolio quality, nil, negligible, so far.
Got it. That is it from my side. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Rakesh Kumar from B&K Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks a lot, sir.
Hi, Rakesh.
Hi, sir. Hi. Congrats, sir. Good number, sir. So just one thing, I want to clarify with respect to notes to accounts detail. So we have acquired around 800 odd crore loans with a residual period of 4 years, 4.6 years or something. And out of that, close to 600 crore number is on the secured side. So just wanted to get some detail. And also, what is the full year credit growth target that we have, sir, internal target that we have?
Yeah. So last question first, credit growth target, we intend to double the book, you know, in about 3.5 years, so you can work backwards out on that. So we are comfortable with the 19% growth. So anywhere between 19-20% growth is a good number to target. More importantly, as far as the transfer of loan exposures is concerned, from our side, the bank has always been playing a key role in alliance and partnerships. In May 2021, when the co-lending circular first came out, we started involving, and we got almost 10 odd co-lending partners right now. The reason for that was that, and we built a co-lending book which is about, you know, is about, my guess is about 5% of the industry. Whereas from a overall perspective, we are about anywhere between 0.25 to 0.3% of the total lending book from a bank, overall banking sense. So we are punching much above our weight in co-lending. The reason I'm telling you this is, the bank has always been partnership focused. So we've had relationships with multiple financial institutions, both on the pass-through certificate front as well as on the direct assignment sense. So securitization and PTCs play an important role. The number of players that we deal with is vast, which has helped us migrate into co-lending also very, very quickly. But the ticket size are usually pretty much low, bite-sized units which you have. So this is important for us. We'll continue on the journey. It gives us insight into new products. We are non-predatory by nature, which helps us also have multiple relationships within the same product, same segment, or same geography. So it is important for us, and we'll continue with it. But and that will be, in a proportion sense, it will be the current proportion to the overall book the bank has.
Mr. Rakesh, does that answer your question?
Yeah, just one question, sir, in addition to that.
Yes.
So the total maturity of the book is around 6 years, correct, no, sir? The book we have taken on our book?
Yeah, door to door,
correct. So basically, the loan is
4.74 years is the current weighted average residual maturity. And the holding period at the originator is about 1.14, but that, frankly, you should look at 4.74 rather than 1.14.
Correct. And, sir, the originator is holding just around 10% of that book, correct, no, sir?
There is a minimum, see, it depends upon what product it is. There is a minimum holding period and a MMR, minimum retention. What is it called? MMR full form? I don't recollect right now. Yeah, there's a portion which is retained by the originator as well.
Correct. So just wanted to understand that 6 years book, like from door to door and unsecured. So what is the characteristics of this loan, sir? If you can, like, you know,
it's a combination. So your combination is not entirely, you know, down figure. There are multiple loans within that, where there are long tenor loans and there are short tenor loans. So, and unsecured typically are short tenor loans, and the average which you see is the weighted average residual maturity.
And credit yield, sorry sir, how much credit yield you mentioned, sir, on this book? Credit yield, sir, on this book?
You're talking about the yield? See,
yes.
We don't give individual yield for the TLE and D book.
Correct. Okay. Thank you, sir. Thanks a lot and all the best, sir.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Shreya Pimple from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity,
hi,
sir. Hi. So I wanted to ask about the recoveries. Recoveries this quarter has been really good. What kind of pipeline that we are looking at, and how do we build the quantity of recovery for this full year? Can you give some sense on that?
So we have a fairly large book of NPA stock of 1400 odd crores, and if you were to look at the page number 25, you will find that a substantial portion of that has matured. So when an NPA happens, either you get the recovery fairly quickly, or you get it after a period of, let's say, 2.5 to 3 years. Why I say that is because the judicial process in India usually takes that amount of time for the possession order to come in, etc. And usually people, when the possession order comes in, that's when people, rummage and find arrange for the loan repayment to happen or sale of asset to happen. Usually in our case, the borrower himself or herself ensures the sale of the property happens in cases where the possession orders come through. So we have a reasonably big vintaged pool from which we are expecting recovery to happen. So effectively, if you were to look at it, 486 crore is mortgages, 176 crore is SME and MSME, which frankly, the collateral for both are practically the same. And then we have a small book of commercial vehicles where probably the recovery factor is not very high. But if you were to look at mortgage and SME, close to about 700 crore of high recovery pool is there with us. In the passage of time, we are confident that we would be able to make a significant recovery. The trend line should continue.
Understood. Thank you so much, sir. And on secondly, on the unsecured business, we have seen in the industry credit costs normalizing. How do you see the unsecured lending part, the credit cost going up, or how's the book seasoning? Can you give some sense on that also?
So on the unsecured book, what we are concerned about is our customers having an unsecured book and how does that impact our secured customer behavior. We also do not have an organic book of unsecured lending, unless you include MFI, and we'll talk about MFI in some time. So on a normal SME mortgage book, what we are clearly looking out for is our customers, our secured customers' behavior in the market from a if he has taken unsecured lending. So based on scrubs with the credit bureau, you understand how which customers to proactively act upon. So far we haven't had any issues on that particular account. The other unsecured book that we have is MFIs. We are our credit our repayments are as per plan, we have, as per our expectation rather, and we haven't seen any worsening of the MFI book in the quarter.
Understood, sir. And the last question, sir, on the business loan part, what is the delta in the yields that we are looking at as far as increasing proportion of business loans is concerned?
Roughly, if you were to look at it today, I can give you a general, if you're a customer and you're taking a business loan, vis-a-vis your customer taking a housing loan, there is anywhere between 1.5 to 2% difference at the time of sourcing itself.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much, sir. That was very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Ravi Prohit from Security Investments Management Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Hello.
Yeah,
can you hear me?
Well, very well, Ravi. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, thanks. Okay. So, you know, this refers to our PPT and this one and the earlier guidance also that we've been mentioning lately about hitting 1% ROA and 14% ROE. So just wanted to understand the mathematics as to, you know, if you hit 1% ROA, how does that translate into a 14% ROE? Because, you know, as I think at one of the conferences, you were referring to the deep bond formula. And you said that, you know, if we look at the constituents of that, and when I work on that, I kind of struggle with the math, right? 1% ROE translating to 14% ROE. If you could just kind of help us give a, you know, insight into what's our path to this 14% ROE? Is it higher, you know, leverage to net worth in terms of more loans? Is it higher NIMs? You know, what is the path towards hitting this 14% ROE? Because there's something over the last 15 years we've never done, right? We've probably achieved within like a hairline distance, maybe about 8 years back or 7 years back. But apart from that, we've never hit like even 13% ROE or 12%. So in that sense, like, where does this confidence for 14% ROE, is it an aspiration or is it something that is that can happen over the next, you know, year and a half?
Good question. So, is an aspiration? Of course, it's an aspiration. Will it happen? We are very confident. Why will it happen? There are two, three components to it. We believe that the investments have been made, okay, and there is a product mix change that is required in some areas. So, I spoke about this earlier. BL, more business loan-oriented growth, which may have a higher capital impact, but not a higher credit impact. The segment remains the same. So that's one element to it. Second, I told you, treads currently, you can guess what kind of returns you make on that vis-a-vis a regular overdraft on the SME platform. So without changing the growth numbers, you're talking about a higher yield coming from in there. There are two areas management is working upon, which will ensure that the aspirational number of 14% will be realized. One is on the fee front. We have a task ahead of us from a late 80 bips, 86 to 90 bips. We have to move towards a 1% of fee. Where will it come from? Will it see what is working for us currently is the third party distribution, is the processing fee, is the ATM charges. Some amount of tailwind will come from the penal charges, which is coming to play. But be it as it may, we want to put our emphasis and thrust on the engagement model that we spoke about, which would result in FB, non-fund based income coming through, fee income coming through. That's a key area of change for us from the way we used to operate. Nothing wrong with mortgage, and we are very comfortable with that. But the opportunity to serve customers is fairly limited because the interaction is perhaps two to three times during the entire life term of the particular loan. The second area where work has to happen is what I told you from the beginning. The investment has been made. That is, the people cost has been incurred. And now how well we squeeze the productivity out of that investment that is made would help us bring down the cost to average down. Over the last 15 months, we brought it down from a high of 2.87 to current levels of 2.71. A similar kind of work would result in us getting to closer to 2.5, which is the aspirational figure from a cost to average asset perspective. Lastly, on the credit costs, on a steady state, one would expect it to be around 35 bps, which is considerably higher than the 18 bps that we currently have. But the model would assume that we would be at around 35 bps on a steady state basis.
Right. So this probably all of these initiatives will help us get a higher ROA, right? An ROA would probably hit one or maybe cross a little above one.
Right.
So the other element of that is how much leverage we can, you know, do on our net worth, right? Which will effectively be made up of deposits and borrowings, right? How much did that come to be, or how much does our balance sheet actually allow us to go? Because if you multiply one for one ROA to get a 14% ROA, you need a leverage of 14 times, right? So where would that, because again, if I go back in history, we've not seen that number, right, ever. The max that we've hit is like 12, maybe once or twice. So ROA piece is, I think, very well communicated. I think you had indicated earlier as well. This ROA translating into 14% ROE, if you could explain or, you know, just help us understand that journey.
The construct is this. The model that we are working upon is that when you utilize the capital fully, we would be operating closer to 15, and when fresh supply of capital comes in, we will be operating close towards 13. So that's the aspirational model that we have built in, where the range of ROE will be in 13 and 15, depending upon how well the utilization of capital happens. But from a risk-weighted asset modeling perspective, we will continue to, in the future also, continue to be in the 53-54% range, unless some dramatic regulatory change happens on the risk weightages that we currently operate, which we cannot foresee.
Okay. Thanks a lot and all the best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Sorry if this question had been answered earlier. Like, one is on the fee growth, like, which has been very strong. So how structural is this? Because it's a very sharp improvement that we are looking at. If you can, like, provide more color on this number that we have reported this quarter.
So we've had 114 crores of core fee growth, which kind of resonates with the 117 crore of core fee growth which we had in quarter four. So from a Q1 perspective, we are reasonably happy with the fee income growth that has come through. There has been a couple of one-offs, one-offs of investment sales that's happened, and also opportunistic income coming in from IPO financing has also helped the cost. But on a clear-cut go-forward basis, I expect the core fee to continue on its momentum towards getting to the 1% mark, which is an important landmark for us to get to the ROA and ROE which we have spoken about in the multiple questions earlier.
Right. Okay, and the other question is on the network expansion. While we have been adding employees at a very aggressive rate, so if I look at last 1 year, our employee count has gone up by more than 20%. But yes, the branch increase is like very measured, like 9 branches on a last 1 year, 3 branches this quarter. So how do you correlate the two, and how will this fit in your medium-term cost income, cost to asset guidance?
Yeah. So effectively, one of the ways we're looking at it is that where is the growth of 20% of liabilities coming in from, or a 19% asset coming in from? Partly it is fueled by the increase in manpower. Most of the deployment of people has been on the front line, and that one of the reasons why it is our cost to average has climbed up is because of the increased expansion of people. Now there are two things in this. One is that our strategy of hiring has given is a lever to us to sort out the goods from the bad in the environment that we currently work. So it is a process of ensuring that the productive people stay and we fail faster on people who are not cutting it. So to some degree that is happening because there's a constant churn. So some bit of attrition in that sense is welcome, because you don't want to carry for want of a better word, freeloaders on the book. So this is not the most effective way of hiring, but we are getting increased emphasis on getting people on board, and then there is this productivity focused movement of people who are not making the cut.
Okay.
And that will continue to happen even in the future also. So I'm not saying the growth, but this process, because getting the right sort of people on the front line is a bit of a cumbersome process.
Right. And lastly, on the CD ratio, like while the bank is pretty much in control, we have reported a decent deposit growth. So, but what is the, say, optimal number that you are looking at in terms of CD ratio, and what is the SLR ratio for the bank?
So, look, my belief is our CD ratio is one of the better ones in the market today, and getting into a sub-80 level may not be a bad idea. We're at 81.6 currently, declining from the previous quarter also. So there is sufficient cushion that we have, but under 80%, under 80 would be a good number to aim at for the shorter term.
Under 80, but why so conservative? Like under 80, because most private banks are above 80 only.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, it's good to have the liquidity. It gives you the raw materials to go ahead and get the right. I mean, today's market, having a strong liquidity backup is pretty much useful. We saw that in quarter four. We saw that in Q1 also. We don't want to be scrambling for deposits at any point in time. You know, being solvent, being liquid is absolutely critical. It's good to be a bit conservative. Having said that, we are also very conscious about the LCR. We keep an internal LCR benchmark much higher than what the regulatory mandatory minimum is.
All right. So
also one more question on that is that we are also looking at improving our liability profile by focusing more on the individuals than on entities and institutions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so this under 80 CD ratio guidance, are we baking it in when we look at a 19-odd% sort of advances growth, 19-20% advances growth, and the overall deposit attrition that we will need?
Yeah,
to deliver on that while improving CD ratio? So are we like looking at that sort of deposit inflow?
We should be able to. There is no reason to believe otherwise. We should be able to do that.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. Thanks for taking all my questions.
Anytime.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Rishikesh from Robo Capital. Please proceed.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. Hi, sir. How are you? So, my first question is with respect to the NII growth. If I've got it correct, we are indicating loan that our NII growth will be similar to loan book growth Y on Y around Q3 or Q4. Is that a fair understanding?
We expect the one-offs to get completely eliminated in the next quarter, and then the term deposit rates to stabilize thereafter. So effectively, what we mean is that from middle of quarter three, you probably see the volume growth reflecting in the NII growth.
Okay, so by Q4, we should maybe see the numbers reflecting in our P&L. Is that a correct understanding?
Yes, yes. Currently, what's happening is that we're growing 20% on the 19% on the assets. We're growing 20% on the yield. And however, the NII is growing only by 6%, right? By 5%.
Yes. My second question is with respect to PSS. My second question is with respect to the LAP book. What is the LAP book currently as a percent of mortgages?
I'm so sorry. I'm not sure I understood the question.
Our business loan book, or the after the LAP book, what is it as a percentage of our mortgage book?
Okay, if your question is what is the business loan as a percentage of a total mortgage book, it's about 50-50.
Yes, yes. It is 50-50, and what do we target going ahead?
We want to increase it. I mean, not that we have a problem with the home loans, but we'll keep that. What you're currently seeing is a reorientation of the team, and we are doing some verticalizations within the organization to ensure that there is greater focus on the 50 lakh to 1 crore segment and also on business loan segment. So there's a bit of a rejigging of the asset structure as we speak, and we should see the benefit of that coming in from maybe quarter 2 or definitely from quarter 3 onwards.
Okay, and one last question with respect to the OPEX. Our OPEX has been higher for this quarter. Is there any one-off or any particular expenses that we have taken? And we have a cost-to-income target of 55%. So by when are we going to achieve it, and how would that take place?
So the single largest component of our cost is the people cost. And like I explained earlier, we have invested heavily in the people, not all of them will be productive, but we're really working hard on making them productive. Those who are productive, is so be it. We're not, we would ensure that that cost does not continue in the future. Getting the productivity up is a number one challenge in getting the cost to income ratios down. In addition to that, you have some changes which are technology driven. So effectively, some components of OPEX, including couriering, stationery cost, storage cost, all these are coming down dramatically because of digitization that we have done on both the liability system as well as the asset system. So that will continue. Those benefits we will get. Plus, we are working on rejigging the sourcing model by giving more emphasis and more weightages to organic sourcing as compared to TSA based sourcing. So these are the elements which will ensure that the OPEX is in control. But the single largest element, what will really move the needle, is about the productivity. If you know the number of people who are being paid salary, and what is the disbursal output from them. You can also include the liabilities, which is the CASA and term deposit output from them.
Okay. That was from my side, sir. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sharinjana from Ratnatraya Capital. Please proceed.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. I have two broad questions. Am I audible?
You're very much audible.
Yeah, hi. So one is on the OPEX side. Currently, like the OPEX in this quarter is a little bit on the higher side. So can you just throw some light on what items and what headers have led to that? And the second is that, is it more of a run rate OPEX for the full year? Should we think of it like that?
So what you should look at is that in Q1 is where the salary increases happen. We also have the full impact of the source, the incremental frontline workforce that we hired. So the number of people that we have is now closer to 12,000. So I would like to think of it like an investment, which would result in both better quality loan book growth and better retail small ticket deposit growth to come in. So effectively, this OPEX that you correctly see is elevated on account of incremental people, and also in Q1 where the increases of emoluments are being given.
Sorry, I didn't get the second part. The increase in?
The increments that typically happens in quarter one.
Right. And on the other expenses side, I understand employee costs. This other expenses side?
Expenses side are fairly static in nature, except for costs which are being replaced by technology. So there is most of the costs are frontline costs. You see that there is the improved use of digitization has helped us in reduction of multiple costs like stationery cost, postage cost, courier cost, storage cost. So there is a clear cut improvement coming in there. The third element we are looking at is in terms of sourcing, where there is greater emphasis on organic sourcing, self-sourcing, than by relying on connectors and DSAs.
Right, understood. And this expense is also more of a run rate number. We'll continue to do such technology investments and,
We would tend to think that this 2.71% cost to average assets would steadily drop as we move forward. Both from the numerator sense as well as the denominator sense.
Understood. Thank you. Just one more question. So you mentioned that like some portion of the fixed rate loan book which will come out, that will also help in the yield expansion because those loans would get repriced. So what proportion, can you just give some sense of what proportion would that be, or how much impact would that have on the yield and the NIMs?
So, look, even in this quarter one, where the NIMs are subdued, that what you said happened. Okay, because every month there are loans which you booked 3 years back, 2.5 years back, 2 years back, which is hybrid in nature, coming up for movement from fixed to floating. So that is a monthly accrual sort of change in rates that happens on a steady state basis. What I can tell you is that is not done and dusted yet. In the future also, there are loans, hybrid loans, which are currently fixed, which will in the future turn to floating unless closed earlier.
Understood. Thank you so much. Thank you for taking my questions.
Not at all.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for the closing comments.
Thank you so very much for your patience and for your questions. If you have any further questions at any given point in time, you can reach our investor relations team. Thank you very much and look forward to hearing from you in any of your conferences or in the next quarterly update meeting. Thank you so very much.